Philippine police set to file murder charges against the alleged mastermind of the murder of broadcaster Percy Lapid. Deaths caused by paeng climbed to 121. Masking up in schools no longer mandatory here in the Philippines. We'll speak with former Health Secretary Esperanza Cabral about this issue. And tit for tat at the Korean Peninsula as Seoul fires three missiles in retaliation to Pyongyang's latest missile launch. Hi, I'm Carmina Constantino. Dateline Philippines begins right now. Thanks for joining us. For those of you watching us on YouTube and on Facebook, glad you could join us today. We begin with an update on the murder of broadcaster Percy Lapid. Police getting closer to unmasking the mastermind behind that crime. The PNP spokesperson said the Justice Department will hold a preliminary investigation on this case this Friday, and a murder complaint could be filed by then against the mastermind.
Mga kuha po tayo ng mga salaysay sa mga ibang persons of interest po na tumatayo din po ng mga suspect plus po yung iba pa pong mga persons ni private liberty na nakuhanan po natin ng mga testimonya. Pati na rin po doon sa resulta po ng mga digital forensic examination na sinigawa po doon sa cellphone po ng self-confessed gunman, pati na rin po doon sa kapatid ng middleman. Kaya lahat ng kompleto ngayong araw at hanggang bukas.
Self-confessed gunman Joel Escorial claims he and three others were paid 550,000 pesos to kill Lapid with a hit organized by a middleman, an inmate inside the National Penitentiary. That alleged middleman, Jun Villamor, was later found dead in prison. An independent autopsy ruled Villamor died by homicide. Well, the brother of Percy Lapid confirms murder charges are set to be filed in the coming days in connection with his brother's murder. Mike Navarro now joins us with details. Mike, what more can you tell us?
Hi, Carmina. Authorities have identified the alleged masterminds in the killing of radio commentator Percy Mabasa, or more popularly known as Percy Lapid. That's according to Lapid's brother, Roy Mabasa. Mabasa met with Justice Secretary Jesus Christine Boying Remulla and National Bureau of Investigation Director Medardo de Lemos at the Department of Justice for a case conference earlier this morning, where some names of those behind the killings were supposedly mentioned. Mabasa, however, said he is not at liberty to reveal the names, leaving it to the authorities to disclose it to the public. Mabasa said authorities are eyeing filing charges by Friday this week or at the latest Monday next week. He, however, refused to divulge how many will be charged, but confirmed that authorities are looking at the filing of murder charges for both the killings of Lapid and alleged middleman Crisanto or Jun Villamor. Villamor was killed inside the New Bilibid prison on October 18, a few hours after he was identified in a press conference by self-confessed gunman Joel Escorial as the one who supposedly offered 550,000 pesos for Lapid's killing. The NBI initially found that no gunshot wounds or any external physical injury on the body and pointed to a possible heart problem as a cause of Villamor's death. But a re-autopsy by forensic pathologist Dr. Raquel Fortun showed he died of asphyxiation by plastic bag suffocation, consistent with statements supposedly provided by Bilibid inmates now under the custody of NBI. Mabasa said Dr. Fortun's re-autopsy findings is a big help in resolving the case. Mabasa said the probe is going well so far, but will reserve comments if the cases are filed. One of the names that cropped up during or after the killing of Lapid is that of former Bureau of Corrections Chief Gerald Bantag, who had earlier denied involvement in the killing. According to Mabasa, they have the same position as the PNP, viewing Gerald Bantag as among the 160 persons of interest in the case. Mabasa said that while he no longer personally receives death threats, his relatives from up north still continue to do so. He said that they have agreed in principle to receive added security but ruled out seeking custody under the DOJ's Witness Protection Program, as it will limit their movements. Mabasa also disclosed the Justice Secretary intends to visit his brother's family to check on their security. Mabasa was accompanied by his lawyer, Danilo Pilagio, and spokesperson, attorney Berteni Causing. Carmina?
Thanks a lot, Mike Navalio, there joining us on the line. Back here in the newsroom, in other news, President Ferdinand Marcos Jr. wants to recalibrate government's disaster response in the wake of Paeng's deadly aftermath. That's as the death toll due to the severe tropical storm climbed to 121. Initial damage to infrastructure now at 1.2 billion pesos, while damage to infrastructure is pegged at 3.4 billion. The chief executive says because of climate change, areas that are not usually affected by floods or landslides are now bearing the brunt of typhoons. He says officials must adapt to these changes so that they won't get caught off guard again.
Within 3-4 hours, yung Odette naging signal 2, naging signal 4. Hmm. Within a few hours, ganun kabilis yung paglakas ng ano. Kaya we have to be very, kailangan bantayan natin ulit. We have to include tree planting in our flood control. Kung may kahoy yun sa taas, sa kusong, hindi nangyari yan. Hindi talaga nangyari yan. That's unfortunate, but I am very clear in my mind that that is something that we could have done.
Aid finally trickles in for storm victims in Maguindanao del Norte. The province was left isolated for days as Paeng damaged roads and bridges there. Many volunteer groups, individuals, and government agencies are crossing the sea just to deliver humanitarian aid.
Kita din namin kasi nung papunta kami dito na meron talagang mga affected area on the way. Every time na mag-move kami, if we need to stop over para po tumulong sa ating mga nasalanta ng bagyo, we will do our best para po tumulong.
Nahirapan kami talaga dito kaya wala talaga kami matanggap dito na kwan. May minsan lang kami matanggap dito, tag 2 kilo, 1 kilo. Paano makakaya? Ang dami-dami namin po dito.
Let's get an update now on the situation in storm-ravaged areas in Maguindanao and Cotabato. Our very own Crislyn Bulosa now joins us for that. Crislyn, what more can you tell us?
Carmina, days after Typhoon Paeng dragged thousands of residents are still in evacuation centers, while some take shelter in makeshift tents outside their damaged houses and still calling financial aid from the government. All relief goods have been distributed already to about 75,000 flood survivors. Residents maintain a few kilos of rice and food packs can only sustain their families for days. What they need, according to the residents, is monetary aid to rebuild and repair their houses. President Ferdinand Marcos Jr. yesterday, when he visited one of the evacuation centers in Maguindanao, vowed to provide 5,000 to 10,000 pesos to each household whose houses are totally damaged to buy their construction materials. But for the evacuees, they will need more than that, since most of them are farmers and will have no income yet after rice fields and agriculture products were damaged by the massive flooding. The town of Mayor of Dato'udin Sinsuat, where the death toll is the highest among others, Mayor Lester Sinsuat said they have a temporary relocation site for evacuees, but it still needs to be inspected to ensure safety. Meanwhile, some schools served as evacuation centers for displaced families. LGUs ordered suspension of classes. In both provinces of Maguindanao del Sur and del Norte, classes are suspended in elementary and high school level in municipalities severely affected. In Cotabato City, classes are suspended in all levels in both private and public schools. And that so far is the latest here in Cotabato. Crislyn Bulosan, ABS-CBN News.
All right, Chris, and just a quick question on the monetary aid. First of all, are there enough stores, hardware stores there open to cater to the needs of those affected by the storm so they can rebuild their homes?
Well, in Cotabato City, we've seen a lot of hardware already opened because in Cotabato City, there is no a massive flooding in highways. And if there are, I mean, the waters have subsided very quickly. Well, in some areas, in Maguindanao particularly, I cannot say if there are really hardware opened. But what we can attest is that residents still need more than the food packs and the rice and the relief goods that are from the government, because according to them, they need a lot more than 5,000 to 10,000 pesos to rebuild and repair their home. Termina.
All right, we're going to have to leave it at that. Crislyn Bulosan there joining us on the line. Take care, Crislyn, while you're there. Moving on, the Cebu City government set to release an executive order to temporarily suspend quarrying following a landslide in the village of Busay. Mayor Michael Rama said the order will cover areas that were identified by experts as danger zones.
this is not anymore a joke. Yeah. Because I keep on telling, there is a portion in Busay, billions of money already being spent by DPWH.
Yeah.
You know, any given time, so will movement will occur, then collapse of the road, yeah. And then expenses.
Mayor Rama also hopes President Marcos will reconsider declaring a nationwide state of calamity. He says this will not only help bring in international aid, but also fast-track the delivery of relief to affected areas. The U.S., China, and Japan, plus Australia, pledge assistance for the Philippines following Paeng's devastation. The U.S. Embassy said it supported the transport of some 10,000 food packs from the Philippine Social Welfare Department to South Cotabato. It adds an additional 25 food trucks are delivering relief to affected families. The Chinese Embassy, meanwhile, brought disaster relief materials to Dato Odin Sinsuat in Maguindanao del Norte. Japan's foreign minister has expressed condolences to the families of Paeng's victims and says Tokyo is ready to provide assistance to the country. Australia's ambassador also offering Canberra's heartfelt thoughts to the Philippines and says it is providing life-saving family kits to the most affected communities in the Bangsamoro region. A severe tropical storm Paeng damaged over 200 schools in the Philippines. The Education Department on Thursday, make that on Tuesday, said 381 classrooms are deemed unusable after they were wrecked by the storm. It has requested lawmakers to earmark 16 billion pesos to fund the repair of schools damaged by typhoons. Over in Pampanga, flooding prompts the suspension of classes in the towns of Masantol and Macabebe until Friday. Our correspondent Gracie Ruta now joins us with an update. Gracie, what more can you tell us?
Carmina, despite improving weather conditions, floods are still high in some towns in the province of Pampanga. In the town of Masantol, all the 26 villages are submerged in 2 to 3 feet of flood water. Schools were not spared. This is why the local government suspended classes in all levels in private and public schools. Masantol Mayor Jose Antonio Bustos said he consulted DepEd district supervisors and Municipal Disaster Risk Reduction and Management Council regarding the suspension of classes. Aside from high tide, the descent of waters from the upstream will further aggravate the flooding situation in the town, especially in the coastal villages in the left bank portion of Pampanga River in Masantol. All barangays remain flooded, including most of the roads which the students should pass through going to their schools and the schools themselves. Flooding is also a problem in the town of Macabebe. According to MDRRMO Macabebe data, 14 out of the 25 barangays are flooded. The water is highest in Barangay Sapla David with a water height of 4 to 5 feet. In Barangay San Gabriel, cars can hardly pass, so the students and residents use boats to travel. 35 schools are also affected by the flood. Students will continue their studies, but in-person classes will be suspended and modular online classes will be implemented for students until Friday. And that's the latest here in Pampanga. Back to you, Carmina.
Thanks a lot, Gracie Rutao. Back in the newsroom, the low-pressure area, formerly called Queenie, will bring rains over eastern Visayas and the Caraga region. Let's get more details now from Pag-asa weather forecaster Raymond Ordinario. Raymond, over to you.
Yes, Ms. Carmina, good afternoon. And this is our update regarding the low-pressure area that formerly Queenie. It was last spotted around 420 kilometers east-southeast of Inatuan, Surigao del Sur, or around 460 kilometers east of Davao City. The extension or trough of the said low-pressure area is now bringing light to moderate with at times heavy rains over the eastern Visayas and Caraga region. Also, we're going to expect cloudy skies with scattered rain showers and thunderstorms over Davao region. Metro Manila and the rest of the country, we're going to expect a generally fair weather condition aside from some isolated rain showers or thunderstorms. Here in Metro Manila, the temperature will range from 24 to 32 degrees Celsius, 16 to 22 in Baguio City, and in Tagaytay City is around 21 to 30 degrees Celsius. As of now, we have gale warning raised over the seabirds of Batanes, Cagayan, Babuyan Island, Ilocos Norte, Ilocos Sur, La Union, Pangasinan, Zambales, Bataan, Cavite, Batangas, Oriental and Occidental Mindoro, Lubang Island and the Northern Palawan including Calamian, Cuyo and Calayan Islands. We're still advising our fisher folks and those who have small sea crabs not to venture out of those seabirds because we're still expecting high wave. And that's the latest from the Weather Forecasting Center of Pagasa, Raymond Ordinario reporting.
Thanks a lot, Raymond, to you and to the rest of the team there. We appreciate what you do. Thanks again. Back here in the newsroom, families of desaparecidos or victims of enforced disappearances during the martial law years gather at the Bantayog ng Mga Bayani to remember their loved ones. Adrian Ayalin now joins us with that story. Adrian, over to you.
Yes, Karina, with nowhere to go on All Souls Day, families of desaparecidos or those who disappeared during the Marcos dictatorship or Marcos Sr. dictatorship remember their lost loved ones here at the Bantayog ng Mga Bayani. The families who offered prayers, candles, and flowers to their presumed dead relatives belong to the Asian Federation Against Enforced Disappearances, or AFAD, and the families of victims of involuntary disappearance or FIND Acting Secretary General Luby Crismo, who lost his church worker brother Romeo, stressed that they will continue to fight historical revisionism to preserve the memory of those who sacrificed their lives during the rule of former President Ferdinand Marcos Sr. Maximo Nartates also recalled how his student activist brother Edwin reportedly went underground during the Marcos Sr. administration until they finally lost contact with him. Ira Manara, for her part, recalled with pride how her brother Johannes Barroso fought injustice in the 1970s as a student activist and a member of the student Christian movement of the Philippines. Carmina, for these families, they may have lost their relatives, but their memories will continue to live on even during the administration of President Ferdinand Marcos Jr. Carmina?
Thanks a lot, Adrian Ayalin. Well, All Saints Day may be over, but cemeteries in Angono, Rizal are always busier the day after. Michael DeLisano joins us to tell us why. Mike?
Hi, Carmina. Good afternoon. Yeah, while the long weekend is over for most of the country, residents of Angono, Rizal are still flocking to cemeteries to honor their dead. Residents here started trooping to cemeteries early in the morning. Cemeteries here are located beside each other. The Angono Municipal Cemetery, Heaven's Gate Cemetery, Sympathy Memorial Park, and St. Clement Catholic Cemetery. Police officers, along with local government officials and volunteers, are on standby to assist the public and ensure peace and order. Road closures and traffic routing are also in place on roads leading to the cemetery, so motorists should expect heavy traffic. Visitors are encouraged to wear face masks and practice physical distancing as much as possible.
Dito sa Angono, ados po talaga kami. Ang pinaka-araw po ng pagpunta namin sa mga patay.
Talagang ano dito, saan ados talaga ang dapat pupunta dito. Pag-auno.
It is an old tradition in this town to hold the Day of the Dead on November 2nd instead of November 1st. A decades-old ordinance has enshrined the tradition as a town law. Old-timers say this is to put more emphasis on All Souls Day rather than All Saints Day. A more practical explanation states that the practice gives residents a chance to visit their dead in other locales before honoring their loved ones in local cemeteries. Back to you, Carmina.
Michael DeLisa there joining us this noon. And from there, we're going to take a quick break. Up ahead, the Education Department under fire for making the use of face masks voluntary for those attending face-to-face classes. One pediatric consultant even called it a big mistake. Stay with Dateline Philippines as we get more reactions to this new policy. And we are back. Here's still Dateline Philippines here on ANC. Here's another look at our headlines this noon. Philippine police set to file murder charges against the alleged mastermind behind the murder of broadcaster Percy Lapid. President Marcos declares a state of calamity in regions devastated by severe tropical storm Paeng. Masking up in Philippine schools no longer mandatory. And tit for tat in the Korean Peninsula as Seoul fires three missiles in retaliation to Pyongyang's latest missile launch. We have this just in. President Ferdinand Marcos Jr. has declared a state of calamity in regions ravaged by severe tropical storm Paeng. These are the regions of Calabarzon, Bicol, Western Visayas, and the Bangsamoro Autonomous Region in Masa, Mindanao. Marcos earlier rejected calls to declare a state of national calamity, saying the damage from Paeng was localized. Well, the use of face masks now optional for students as Philippine public schools return to face-to-face classes today. But some schools in calamity-hit areas were not able to resume classes. Ara Perez now joins us with details. Ara, go ahead.
Carmina, among schools that are exempted are those affected by calamities and those experiencing congestion. Deputy spokesperson Attorney Michael Poa said it is up to the regional directors to implement the parameters in allowing some public schools to continue with blended learning. Like here in NCR, 50 schools are exempted, which translates to 6% of the total number of public schools in the region. Deputy NCR Regional Director Wilfredo Cabral said the direction is towards full in-person classes, but issues must first be resolved, including construction of more buildings. On indoor masking, POA said they will comply with the latest EO7, allowing voluntary face mask wearing in indoor areas like classrooms. But the official admits students and teachers are used to wearing face masks, which they also witnessed during their school inspection this morning. On teachers supposedly being asked to return their laptops, POA clarified these gadgets are meant for the DepEd computerization program and were only lent when pure distance learning was being utilized. Carmina.
Thanks a lot. Ara Perez there. Back here in the newsroom, a huge mistake. That's how a pediatrics consultant described the Education Department's voluntary face mask use and or face mask use policy in schools. Dr. Cynthia Wico points out most children have yet to be vaccinated against COVID, putting them more at risk of contracting the virus compared to adults. She adds some schools in the country are also overcrowded.
Hindi naman natin alam kung anong mga reaksyon ng mga bata. Pagpasok niyan sa eskwela, akapan niyan. Tapos ang punong-puno ang eskwelahan natin. Kagaya ngayon, pumasok na sila, di ba? So may mga pasyente na kami dumadating na akala mo si punto ko maski na sa clinic, maski na sa emergency room. Tapos pag tinest mo, positive. So sila pa ngayon ang magdadala ng COVID sa bahay nila.
For a teacher's group, while the policy is being implemented by now, they will still try their best to explain to their students the importance of using face masks.
Importante pa rin po yung mag-mask sila kasi nga po, ang classroom po namin masisikip eh. Di po siya malawa. Papaliwanag pa rin po natin yung kahalagaan ng pagsusot ng face mask. Kasi importante po na hindi talaga sila magkasakit. At saka po ang mga bata, pagka napaliwanagan naman po yan, sumusunod po talaga sila.
Well, let's get the take of former Health Secretary Esperanza Cabral on government's move to make mask wearing optional in schools. She now joins us here in the program. Dr. Cabral, nice to see you again, and thank you for joining us today.
Hello, Carmina. Nice to be with you.
All right, so you've got millions of school children heading back to school, back to face-to-face classes, and then this policy of making the wearing of face mask optional. How concerning is this for you?
Well, it is concerning. It was a political decision, and now we are going to have to just make the best of it. Our messaging should be very comprehensive about what to do and in the face of this voluntary face mask mandate. And we need to be ready. Our doctors and the health facilities need to be ready just in case there is an increase in the number of children catching COVID because they're not wearing face masks.
Dr. Cabral, let me just backtrack a bit and go back to what you just said. You're calling this a political decision. What makes you say that?
Well, it is obviously something that many doctors do not agree with, and yet it was mandated. So it is really a decision of our political leaders rather than, our health leaders.
Mm-hmm. And what's the danger there if this keeps on happening?
if we keep ignoring the advice of our health experts, then some of the things that they are concerned about or worried about might happen. I'm not saying that it is going to happen. Actually, it may not. It depends on if the children become more vaccinated, if more of the children are vaccinated, if their classrooms are well ventilated and there is no congestion, and if the community transmission of COVID is low in that particular area, no bad thing may happen. On the other hand, if the opposite, the conditions prevail, then COVID might increase.
A while ago, you said we need to be ready. What are the possible scenarios out there?
The possible scenario that we are worried about is an increase in the number of COVID among these children, as well as the number of people who have comorbidities and who have not been vaccinated who can catch COVID from these children. Many of the children, or more of them, or most of them, even if they catch COVID, are just going to have a very mild illness. But if they bring this home and they have a grandfather or a grandmother who has diabetes or who has cancer or who is generally frail, and this person catches COVID from the grandchild, that is a different story. And our health facilities have to be ready, not just for the children, but for these people.
Now, it is voluntary, right? It's really going to be up to the child, whether or not the child is going to wear the mask. That responsibility has been given to the individual to wear or not to wear the mask. However, because it is voluntary, why do you think they even had to come out with such a policy?
Because before, it was mandated for school children to wear their masks. And now they're saying, if you don't want to wear your mask, you may not wear it.
But how is this going to help the situation?
It is going to help in other things. We know that mask wearing for children is something that affects them psychologically more than adults. So if they don't wear a mask, that is going to free them from this particular emotional concern. So that is something that is good about not wearing a mask. But there are also very many bad things that we can get from not wearing a mask. Making it a personal decision needs to come with important messages, such as, if you are sick or you're not feeling well at all, stay home. The children should be told this. They should not be allowed to take face-to-face classes in that instance.
But the good thing is, I mean, our correspondents have been roaming some schools at least, and they've been talking to children, and the children have been saying, at least talking to our correspondents about this, they've been saying they're not going to wear the masks. They're still going to wear the masks because the pandemic is still here.
Yes, we're very glad to see that. The children themselves have decided that wearing the mask is important to keep themselves healthy and free of COVID. And I hope that this is encouraged by the teachers, by the communities, as well as by the local governments. Really, when you are a high community transmission type of local government, then you should really encourage these children to wear their masks.
Now, how can this be better managed by the DepEd, by the DOH?
They need to coordinate very well with the local government units. They need to tell their teachers there is a voluntary mask-wearing mandate, but it is not for everybody. There are certain conditions where you will have to tell the children, we are now going to have to wear our mask because the community transmission of COVID is very high in our area. They will have to tell children who have had COVID that when they come to class for a certain period of time, like 5 or 10 days after they recover from COVID, they still will have to wear their masks so that the possibility of them transmitting COVID to their classmates is going to be reduced.
Do you share the same opinion as others, Dr. Cabral, that this is being pushed too early? That we have the holidays coming, and then there's the new sub-variants that are cropping up, that this policy could have waited?
Of course it could have waited, but I am not of the opinion that this is something that we can decide on our own. We can tell them this is what is going to happen, and then the leaders will have to make a judgment call. Mm. And whatever happens, that is now their accountability, because this is what the health experts advise. This is what is good for your economy. You're going to have to balance things. Mm. And when you make a decision, that is now your accountability.
Mm-hmm. Now, let's talk about the cases that are cropping up. There have been accounts that for some people who were able to avoid the virus, evade the virus for the last 2 years, are now getting it, and the symptoms are the symptoms are not that mild compared to the other cases. Are you hearing the same sort of thing?
Yes. If you go to the hospitals, you will see that there is an increase in the number of people who are being admitted for COVID. Yeah, the people who are being admitted for COVID now are mostly those who are unvaccinated. There is still protection from whatever mutation of the COVID virus is present now by the previous vaccination as well as the booster shots that we have had.
Mm-mm.
And that's why we need to tell people, go please and get your vaccination and your booster shots.
Mm-hmm. Also, some experts saying that this is counterintuitive because the vaccination rate for the children going back to school is not that high. And yet they're there in cramped classrooms. It's a disaster waiting to happen, according to some. Do you believe that, Dr. Cabral?
That's a possibility. I would not discount that. As you said, the classrooms are not really big enough to contain the pupils with a good social distancing level. Mm. Of course, the classrooms are not air-conditioned, so there is a free flow of air, and that is very good. But still, most classrooms are congested, so that is a risk. Mm. That is something that that cannot be helped, because there are just so many students and so few classrooms and very little space for them. So these are things that need to be taken into consideration. That's why it's very important for the teachers to tell the students, if you are not feeling well at all, please stay home.
Let's talk about the vaccination program and what you know of it as it stands right now, Dr. Cabral. Where are we? I mean, the DOH has been telling us it's ongoing, but do the numbers reflect that more and more people are indeed getting vaccinated, getting their booster shots?
More people are getting vaccinated, but not at the rate that we want. And therefore, for example, for children, we don't even have 50% of children vaccinated, let alone getting their booster shots. The DOH and the local government units, as well as the DepEd, are trying hard, but they should do more, because we really need to get those kids vaccinated if we do not want them to get COVID and if we do not want them to infect people with comorbidities and who are immunocompromised from getting COVID from them.
Dr. Esperanza Cabral there, former Secretary of the Health Department. Appreciate you coming to the show, joining us this noon. Always a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you, Carmina.
Thanks again. And we're going to take another break now. Still ahead, more changes over at Twitter under an Elon Musk ownership. That includes verified users shelling out a monthly fee to keep that coveted blue check mark. This is Dateline Philippines. Stay with ANC.
And the fact it's a sword fighting art form.
Now, I kneel before no one.
Yong Chavez, ABS-CBN News, here in Hollywood.
In this world.
And that'll do it for today. Thanks for joining us. I'm Carmina Constantino. If you want to revisit today's episode, you can play back this newscast on ANC's YouTube channel and on ANC 24/7 on Facebook. Keep safe. Keep it here on ANC.